Chapter 27. A Call to Stand. "I am not opposed to questioning the Lord Dragon," Egwene read from the letter as she sat in her study. "Indeed, the more absolute a man's power becomes, the more necessary questioning becomes. However, know that I am not a man who gives his loyalty easily, and I have given my loyalty to him. Not because of the throne he provided me, but because of what he has done for Tyr. Yes, he grows more erratic by the day. What else are we to expect from the Dragon Reborn? He will break the world. We knew this when we gave him our allegiance, much as a sailor must sometimes give his loyalty to the captain who steers his ship straight for the rocks. When an unnavigable tempest rises behind, the rocks are the only option. Still, your words bring me concern. The destruction of the seals is not something we should undertake without careful discussion. The Lord Dragon charged me with raising him an army, and I have done so. If you provide the gateways you have promised, I will bring some troops to this meeting place along with the loyal High Lords and Ladies. Be warned, however, that the Seanchan presence to my west continues to weigh heavily upon my mind. The bulk of my armies must remain behind. High Lord Darlin Cisnera, King of Tyr, beneath the rule of the Dragon Reborn, Randall Thor." Egwene tapped the sheet with one finger. She was impressed. Darlin had committed his words to paper, rather than sending a messenger with them memorized. If a messenger fell into the wrong hands, his words could always be denied. Convicting a man of treason based on the testimony of one messenger was difficult. Words on paper, however, bold. By writing them, Darlin said, "I do not care if the Lord Dragon discovers what I have written. I stand by it." But leaving behind the bulk of his army? That would not do. Egwene inked her pen. "King Darlin, your concern for your kingdom is well measured, as is your loyalty to the man you follow. I know that the Seanchan are a danger to Tyr, but let us not forget that the Dark One, not the Seanchan, is our primary concern during these worst of days. Perhaps it is easy to think yourself safe from the Trollocs when so distant from the battle lines, but how will you feel once the cushions of Andor and Kyrian have fallen? You are separated from the Seanchan by hundreds of miles." Egwene paused. Tarvalin had been separated from the Seanchan by hundreds of miles and had nearly been destroyed. He was right to be afraid, and he was a good king for considering it. But she needed his army at the field of Merilor. Perhaps she could offer a way for him to both be safe and help with Rand. "Ilion holds for now," she wrote, "and gives you a buffer between the Seanchan and yourself. I will provide you with gateways and a promise. If the Seanchan move against here, I will give you gateways so you can return immediately and defend your nation." She hesitated. Chances were good that the Seanchan had traveling now. Nobody was safe from them, no matter how far or close they might be. If they decided to strike for Tyr, even giving Darlin gateways back might not be enough to help. She felt a shiver, remembering her own time with the Seanchan, captive as a Damani. She loathed them with a hatred that sometimes worried her. But Darlin's support was essential to her plans. She gritted her teeth and continued writing. "The Dragon Reborn must see our full forces marshaled to oppose his brash intentions. If he sees this as half-hearted, we will never dissuade him from his course. Please come with all of your troops." She sanded the letter, then folded and sealed it. Darlin and Elaine were monarchs of two of the most powerful kingdoms. Both were very important to her plans. Next, she would respond to a letter from Gregorin den Lushenos of Ilion. She hadn't yet told him directly that she had met in Stepanaeus at the White Tower, but had hinted at it. She'd also spoken to Matin himself, letting him know he was free to leave, if he wished. She would not be in the habit of holding monarchs against their will. Unfortunately, Matin was now afraid for his life, should he return. He'd been gone too long, and he viewed Ilion as being in the Dragon Reborn's pocket. Which it probably was. What a mess. One problem at a time. Gregorin, the steward in Ilion, was very hesitant to support her cause. He seemed more intimidated by Rand than Darlin was, and the Shan Shan were not a distant concern for him. They were practically pounding on his city gates. She wrote Gregorin a firm letter, giving a promise like the one she'd given Darlin. Perhaps she could arrange to keep Matin away, something both men might want, though she wouldn't let Gregorin know that, in exchange for him bringing his armies northward. Obliquely, she realized what she was doing. She was using Rand's proclamation as a beacon by which to gather and tie the monarchs to the White Tower. They would come to support her arguments against breaking the seals, but in the end, they would serve humankind in the last battle. A knock came at her door. She looked up as Sylviana peeked in. The woman held up a letter. It was curled tightly from having been carried in by Pigeon. "Your expression is grim," Egwene noted. "The invasion has begun," she said. "Watchtowers across the Blight border go silent, one at a time. Waves of Trollocs advance beneath clouds that boil black. Kandor, Arafel, and Saldea are at war." "Do they hold?" Egwene asked, with a spike of fear. "Yes," Sylviana said. "But news is uncertain and piecemeal. This letter, which is from an eyes and ears I trust, claims that an assault this massive has not been seen since the Trolloc Wars." Egwene took a deep breath. "What of Tarwyn's Gap?" "I don't know. Find out. Call Swan in here. She might have more. The Blue Network is the most extensive." Swan wouldn't know everything, of course, but she would have her fingers in it. Sylviana nodded curtly. She didn't say the obvious, that the Blue Network was the Blue Ajahs, not to be preempted by the Ammerlin. Well, the last battle was at hand. Some concessions had to be made. Sylviana closed the door softly, and Egwene picked up her pen to finish her screed to Gregorin. She was interrupted by another knock, this one much more hasty. Sylviana threw open the door a second later. "Mother," she said, "they're meeting, as you said they would." Egwene felt a stab of annoyance. She calmly put down her pen and stood. "Let us be to it, then." She walked from her study, pace hurried. In the keeper's antechamber she passed a pair of accepted, Nicola, who had just been raised, and Nyssa. She'd like them both raised to the shawl before the last battle. They were young but powerful, and every sister would be needed, even one who, like Nicola, had proved to have terrible judgment in the past. These two had brought the news about the hall. The novices and accepted were among the most loyal to Egwene, but were often ignored by the sisters. For now they remained behind, as Egwene and Sylviana hurried toward the hall. "I can't believe they would try this," Sylviana said softly as they walked. "It's not what you think," Egwene guessed. "They won't try to depose me. The division is too fresh in their minds." "Then why meet without you?" "There are ways to move against an Ammerlin without deposing her." She'd been expecting this for some time, but that didn't make it any less frustrating. Aes Sedai would unfortunately be Aes Sedai. It had only been a matter of time before someone decided to try wrenching power from her. They reached the hall. Egwene pushed open the doors and stepped in. Her appearance was met with cool Aes Sedai gazes. The seats weren't all filled, but two-thirds of them were. She was surprised to see three red sitters. What of Pavara and Javindra? It appeared that their extended absence during this time had prompted the red to action. They had been replaced by Rachin and Viria Conneral. The sisters were the only siblings in the White Tower, now that Van Deen and Adelius were dead. An odd choice, but not unexpected. Both Romanda and Lelaine were in attendance. They met Egwene's gaze evenly. How strange to see them here with so many sisters who they had been at odds with. A common foe, Egwene, could heal any number of rifts. She should have been pleased at that, perhaps. Lilaine was the only blue, and there was also only one brown. Takima, who looked sick. The ivory-skinned brown wouldn't meet Egwene's gaze. There were two whites, two yellows, including Romanda, two greys, and all three greens. Egwene gritted her teeth when she saw that. That was the Aja she would have joined, but it gave her the most grief. Egwene did not chastise them for meeting without her. She simply strode down between them, Sylviana announcing her. Egwene turned and sat down on the Ammerlin seat, her back to the massive rose window. There she sat quietly. "Well?" Romanda finally asked. Her gray hair up in a bun, she looked like a mother wolf sitting atop the ledge out front of her den.
"Are you going to say anything, mother?"
"You did not inform me of this meeting," Egwene said, "so I assume you do not want my words. I have come merely to watch."
That seemed to make them more uncomfortable. Sylviana walked to her side, brandishing one of her best expressions of displeasure.
"All right, then," Rubinda said. "I believe we were going to hear from Saroya next."
The blocky white was one of the sitters who had left the tower when Elida was raised, but she had made her share of trouble in Saladar. Egwene was not surprised to see her here. The woman stood, pointedly not looking at Egwene.
"I will add my testimony. During the days of uncertainty within the tower,"
that would mean the division, few sisters liked to speak of it outright, "the Ammerlin did exactly as Romanda indicated. We were taken by surprise when she called for a declaration of war. Within the law, there are provisions that give the Ammerlin almost total power when official war is declared. By being goaded into making war with Elida, we gave the Ammerlin the means to subject the hall to her will." She looked around the room but did not turn to Egwene. "It is my opinion that she will try something similar again. That must be prevented. The hall is meant to be a balance upon the Ammerlin's power."
She sat down.
Hearing the words actually relieved Egwene. One could never be certain what kinds of scheming were happening in the White Tower. This meeting meant her plans were proceeding as hoped, and that her enemies, or, well, her reluctant allies, hadn't seen what she was really doing. They were busy reacting to things she'd done months ago. That didn't mean they weren't dangerous, but when a person anticipated danger, it could be handled.
"What can we do?" Magla asked. She glanced at Egwene.
"To be prudent, I mean. To make certain the hall of the tower is in no way limited."
"We cannot declare war," Lilaine said firmly.
"And yet, to avoid it," Varalyn said. "War is declared between halves of the White Tower, but not against the Shadow?"
"War," Takima said hesitantly, "is already declared against the Shadow. Need there be an official proclamation? Is not our existence enough? Indeed, do not the oaths make our position clear?"
"But we must make some kind of declaration," Romanda said.
She was eldest among them, and would be the one running the meeting. "Something to make the position of the hall known, to dissuade the Ammerlin from an imprudent call for war." Romanda didn't seem embarrassed at all by what they had done here. She looked directly at Egwene. No, she and Lilaine would not quickly forgive Egwene for choosing a red as her keeper.
"But how would we send such a message?" Andaya asked. "I mean, what are we to do? Make a pronouncement from the hall that there won't be a declaration of war? Would that not sound ridiculous?"
The women fell silent. Egwene found herself nodding, though not specifically to what was being said. She had been raised through unconventional circumstances. Left alone, the hall would try to establish its power as greater than hers. This day could easily have meant a step toward that.
The Armalyn seat's strength had not been constant through the centuries. One could rule almost totally, while another was controlled by the sitters.
"I believe the hall acts in wisdom," Egwene said, speaking very carefully. The sitters turned to her. Some looked relieved. Those who were more familiar with her, however, looked suspicious. Well, that was good. Better they regard her as a threat than as a child to be bullied. She hoped they would eventually respect her as their leader, but there was only so much she could do with the time given.
"The war between factions within the tower was a different type of battle," Egwene continued. "It was deeply and individually my battle, as Armalyn, for that division was initially about the Armalyn seat. But the war against the Shadow is more vast than any one person. It is greater than you or I, greater than the White Tower. It is the war of all life and creation, from the most destitute of beggars to the most lavish of queens."
The sitters considered that in silence. Ramonda spoke first.
"And so you would not oppose the Hall taking over prosecution of the war? Managing General Bryn's armies and the Tower Guard?"
"That depends," Egwene said, "upon how the provision was worded." There was movement in the hallway outside, and Saeron bustled into the hall, accompanied by Janya Frenda. They shot Takima withering glances, and she shrank down like a threatened bird. Saeron and Egwene's other supporters would have been informed of this meeting just after Egwene herself was. Ramonda cleared her throat.
"Perhaps we should see if there is anything in the law of war that can help."
"I'm certain you have studied it quite thoroughly now, Ramonda," Egwene said. "What is it you propose?"
"There is a provision for the Hall taking up prosecution of a war," Ramonda said.
"That requires the Armalyn's assent," Egwene said idly. If that was Ramonda's game, then how had she intended to get Egwene's approval after meeting without her? Perhaps she'd had a different plan.
"Yes, it would require the Armalyn's agreement," said Rachin. She was a tall, dark-haired woman, and liked to wear her hair in a coil of braids atop her head.
"But you said that you thought us wise to take this measure."
"Well," Egwene said, trying to sound as if she were being pressed into a corner,
"agreeing with the Hall is quite different from allowing a provision to ban me from the day-to-day workings of the army. What is the Armalyn seat to do, if not see to the war?"
"By reports, you've been dedicating yourself to wrangling kings and queens," Lilaine said. "That seems a fine task for the Armalyn."
"Then you'll stand for such a provision?" Egwene said. "The Hall sees to the army while I am given authority for dealing with the monarchs of the world?"
Lilaine said.
"Yes, I'd stand for that."
"I suppose I could agree," Egwene said.
"Shall we put it to a vote?" Ramonda said quickly, as if pouncing on the moment.
"Very well," Egwene said. "Who will stand for this motion?"
Rubinda rose to her feet and was joined by Faisella and Farna, the other greens. Rachin and her sister stood quickly, though Barasine was watching Egwene with eyes narrowed. Magla stood next, and Ramonda reluctantly joined her. Farana rose slowly. Lilaine was next. She and Ramonda shot daggered glances at one another. That was 9. Egwene's heart beat quickly as she glanced at Takima. The woman seemed very disturbed, as if trying to sort through Egwene's plan. The same went for Soroya. The calculating white studied Egwene, tugging her ear. Suddenly her eyes went wide, and she opened her mouth to speak. At that moment, Doasine and Yukiri arrived, striding into the room. Saeron stood immediately. Slim Doasine glanced at the women around her.
"What motion are we standing for?"
"An important one," Saeron said.
"Well, I suppose I'll stand for it then."
"As will I," Yukiri said.
"The lesser consensus is given, it seems," Saeron said. The Hall is given authority over the White Tower's army, while the Ammerlin is given authority and responsibility for dealing with the world's monarchs.
No, Soroya said, climbing to her feet. Don't you see? He is a king. He holds the laurel crown. You've just given the Ammerlin sole responsibility for dealing with the dragon reborn.
There was silence in the hall.
Well, Ramonda said, surely she...
She trailed off as she turned, seeing Egwene's serene face.
I suppose someone should ask for the greater consensus, Saren said dryly. But you've managed to hang yourselves quite efficiently with the lesser rope already.
Egwene stood. I meant what I said about the Hall's choices being wise, and nobody has hanged herself. It is wise of the Hall to put me in charge of dealing with the Dragon Reborn. He will need a firm, familiar hand. You are also wise to see that the details of managing the army were demanding too much of my attention. You will want to choose someone among you to go through and approve all of General Bryn's supply requests and recruitment schemes. I assure you there are a multitude of them. I am pleased that you have seen the need to aid the Ammerlin, though I am deeply displeased at the secretive nature of this meeting. Do not try to deny that it was done in secret, Ramonda. I see you preparing to object. If you wish to speak, know that I will pin you by the three oaths into answering directly. The yellow bit off her comment. How can you not have learned the foolishness of acts like this? Egwene said. Is your memory so short? She looked at the women in turn and was satisfied by the number who winced. It is time, Egwene said, for a change to be made. I propose that there be no further meetings of this nature. I propose that it be written into Tower law that if any sitter leaves the White Tower, her Aja must appoint a surrogate to vote for her while absent. I propose that it be written into Tower law that no meeting of the Hall can be convened unless every sitter or her surrogate either is present or has sent word directly that she cannot attend. I propose that the Ammerlin must be informed and given a reasonable amount of time to attend if she wishes of every meeting of the Hall, save when she cannot be found or is indisposed in some way.
Bold changes, Mother, Saren said. You propose altering traditions that have been established for centuries.
Traditions that hitherto have been used only for treachery, backbiting, and division, Egwene said. It is time for this hole to be closed, Saren. The last time it was used effectively, the Black Aja manipulated us into casting down an Ammerlin, raising a fool in her place, and dividing the tower. Are you aware that Kandor, Saldea, and Arafel are swarming with shadow spawn? Several of the sisters gasped. Others nodded, including Lelaine. So the blue network was still reliable. Good. The last battle is here, Egwene said. I will not withdraw my proposal. Either you will stand now, or you will be known through all time as one of those who refused. At the dusk of an age, can you not stand for openness and light? Will you not, for all of our sakes, make it impossible for a meeting of the Hall to be called without your presence? To leave any out means the possibility that you will be left out. The women were silent. One by one, those who were standing sat back down to prepare for the new vote. Who will stand for this motion? Egwene asked. They stood. Blessedly they stood, one at a time, slowly, reluctantly, but they did it, every one of them. Egwene let out a deep breath. They might squabble and scheme, but they knew right when they saw it. They shared the same goals. If they disagreed, it was because they had different views on how to reach those goals. Sometimes it was hard to remember that. Looking shaken by what they'd done, the
The sitters allowed the meeting to break up. Outside, sisters had begun to gather, surprised to find the hall meeting. Egwene nodded to Saren and the others of her supporters and walked from the room, Sylviana at her side.
"That was a victory," the keeper said once they were alone. She sounded satisfied.
"But you did still give up control of our armies."
"I had to," Egwene said. "They could have pulled command away from me at any time. This way I got something in return."
"Authority over the Dragon Reborn?"
"Yes," Egwene said. "But I was referring more to closing that loophole in Tower Law. So long as it was possible for the Hall to meet in relative secret, my authority, the authority of any Amyrlin, could be circumvented. Now, if they want to maneuver, they'll have to do it in front of my face."
Sylviana gave a rare smile.
"I suspect that since something like today is the result of such maneuvering, Mother, they will be more hesitant in the future."
"That's the idea," Egwene said. "Though I doubt Aes Sedai will ever stop trying to maneuver. They simply cannot be allowed to dice with the last battle or the Dragon Reborn."
Back at Egwene's study, Nicola and Nyssa still waited.
"You did well," Egwene told them. "Very well. In fact, I'm of a mind to give you more responsibility. Go to the traveling ground and go to Camelin. The Queen there will be expecting you. Return with the items she gives you."
"Yes, Mother," Nicola said, grinning. "What will she give us?"
"Tarangreal," Egwene said. "Used for visiting the world of dreams. I'm going to begin training you and some others in their use. Do not use them without my express permission, however. I will send some soldiers to go with you."
"That should be enough to keep the two in line."
The two accepted, curtsied, and trotted away, excited. Sylviana looked at Egwene.
"You didn't swear them to silence."
"They are accepted, and they will brag about being trained with the Tarangreal."
"I'm depending on it," Egwene said, walking to the study door.
Sylviana raised an eyebrow. "I don't intend to let the girls come to harm," Egwene said. "In fact, they'll be doing a lot less in Telaranriod than they probably suspect from what I just said. Rosil has been lenient with me so far, but she'll never let me put accepted in danger. This is just to start the proper rumors."
"What rumors?"
"Gawain scared off the assassin," Egwene said. "There hasn't been a murder in days, and I suppose we should bless him for that. But the killer is still hiding, and I've glimpsed black sisters watching me in Telaranriod. If I can't catch them here, then I will catch them there. But first I need a way to trick them into thinking they know where to find us."
"So long as you intend them to find you, and not those girls," Sylviana said.
Voice calm, but iron.
She had been the mistress of novices.
Egwene found herself grimacing, thinking of the things that had been expected of her as an accepted. Yes, Sylviana was right. She would have to take care not to subject Nicola and Nyssa to similar dangers. She had survived and was stronger for it, but accepted should not be put through such trials unless there was no other choice.
"I will take care," Egwene said. "I simply need them to spread the rumor that I have a very important meeting coming up. If I lay the groundwork properly, our phantom won't be able to resist coming in to listen."
"Bold."
"Essential," Egwene said. She hesitated, hand on her door.
"Speaking of Gawain, have you found out where in the city he's run off to?"
"Actually, Mother, I had a note on this earlier today. It appears that, well, he isn't in the city. One of the sisters delivering your messages to the Queen of Andor returned with news of seeing him there."
Egwene groaned, closing her eyes.
"That man will be the death of me."
"Tell him to return. Infuriating though he is, I'm going to need him in the coming days."
"Yes, Mother," Sylviana said, taking out a sheet of paper.
Egwene entered her study to continue her letters. Time was short.
Time was so very, very short.